The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blurred Girl, Kara Mahorn, and Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski.
Ahoy.
Hello.
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 We said hello at the same time.
We did.
Kara and I are in sync. Whereas you're just
group.
a pirate, I guess.
Backstreet Boy, damn.
Ahoy.
Ahoy. That's right.
How y'all doing?
Good, man.
Are you ready
good.
To talk about...
What a week.
Yeah, what a week indeed. So we're... Yeah,
things
we're,
usually slow down as we hit the end of the year, but
not
man,
this
with
time.
All the movies and
for
stuff.
Who?
Yeah,
I know. Oh, my God. Yeah,
so we've got two movies to talk about this week. We've got some Elseworlds stuff that happened, and Doctor Who ended, and gosh, it's going to be a bit of a break after New Year's. We'll talk about that, but first, we do this thing where we talk about stuff we're personally geeking out about, because we're nerds. Adam, what are you geeking out about?
Well... I am geeking out about the mid-season finale of The Good Place, which is one of my favorite shows in general, but this episode was a showcase for Darcy Carden, who mm-hmm. plays Janet, because, I mean, this isn't a major spoiler. They get stuck in Janet's kind of home void.
That, yeah, that's where
and
they
everyone
left them.
Takes the identity of or the image of Janet. So the most of the
yeah,
episode...
So Darcy's playing everybody.
Exactly. And she is... I mean, she's always kind of been the sneak MVP of the show, but in this episode, it's just a showcase for her from top to bottom, and she's amazing in it. She evokes every character really, really well, particularly Jason. Her stuff is Jason.
She put out they put out a YouTube video where she said that Jason was the one that she enjoyed the most, and she had the hardest time with Chidi.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because he's got a very particular cadence.
Right, but she nails it, and it's just so it's a great episode of that show. And a really great acting showcase for her. And if there's any justice in the world, which, you know, if The Good Place is true, there isn't, then Darcy Carden will be a huge comedic star moving forward, or at least her star will be on the rise, because she is, again, has always kind of been the low-key MVP of that show. And that episode in particular was just a real chance for her to shine. So if you have not yet seen the mid-season finale of The Good Place and you're a fan of the show, please watch it post-haste because it is fantastic.
It's great. I actually hope that, you know, like Kristen Wiig or like Melissa McCarthy could take Darcy under a wing and bring her into a movie or something. That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was my thing.
Cool. Karma, what about you?
Well, I was geeking out about actually something I haven't seen yet, which is I'm getting ready to sit down this weekend and watch season 7 of Voltron Legendary Defender and on Netflix. And then I made the mistake of going on Twitter and all these people were spoiling it because and I'm not going to spoil it for those of you listening, but apparently there's some things that happen or don't happen with certain characters that people were looking forward to. So besides that, I am looking forward to it. I'm a big fan of that show. And there was also a trailer that was dropped for the final season, which they're not saying when it's coming out, but so I'm going to be spending my weekend doing that. So
is this when they finally cross over with the Power Rangers?
Oh God, no, that should never happen.
Like Rita
no.
Repulsa shows up and makes your monster grow.
No, that is sacrilege, man. No, Voltron is completely different.
I know. I just see robots joining into other robots, and that's you know, it's all of a piece.
But that is how I'm going to spend my weekend. So I'm geeking out about that.
Cool. Saying that they're completely different is bold, but you do that.
Look.
Completely different.
And saying that Kong Skull Island is a work of cinematic prowess
oh,
is like...
Oh, snap! Oh! Yeah, I'm high-fiving Karma on that one.
I'm so sorry that y'all don't understand good movies.
Call the Monarch Burn Unit, because Danny just got burned.
Listen, I got a giant monkey on my side. It's all good. It's cool.
God, that was the most satisfying moment of my year.
But you got posters this week. Both of you got posters.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited for King of the Monsters.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Mothra. There's four separate posters that dropped. It was
so good.
Mothra, Rodan,
Ghidorah.
Ghidorah, and then the king himself.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we'll see who the king
so,
is.
So, Danny, if you can possibly
Godzilla's
recover,
king,
if your soul
king
is
ass,
not,
I'm
like,
sorry.
Has not left your body after that sick burn from Karama.
You ready? I'm going to make you feel really guilty because I'm gonna rep our friends. Because the stuff that I'm geeking out about this week is not one, but two podcasts.
Oh, I know what you're going to talk about.
So, first of all, Runaways is back.
Yes.
And a really huge piece of news is... frequent guests of the podcast and occasional guests of the podcast, Angelique Roche and Lorraine Sink,
mm-hmm.
are co-hosting the official podcast to correspond with it. That was a huge, huge piece of information that dropped this week.
This week, yeah.
And
show comes back next week. So yeah.
Yeah, two of the nicest really people sad. That I know, two of the best people I think we've had on this podcast, other than the two of you, I guess. Although after that Kong thing, it's up for debate. I'm really excited about that, and I started listening to the Battlestar Galactica cast.
Oh yeah,
To promote our own brand. But speaking of incredibly nice people, Mark Bernardin, who is I think probably
he's so cool,
he's fantastic. Definitely the perfect person to do I think a Battlestar Galactica podcast, and having Trisha Helfer come and sort of really watch the show after having started it so many years ago to be able to kind of come in and have her own perspective, stuff she might remember, and also just, it's interesting to see how an actor reacts to their own work far enough after the fact. So that's been really exciting.
Yeah.
And they just started it, so you can check that out. If you go to sci-fi.com, you can find it pretty easily, or on iTunes or on Spotify. It's on all that stuff. So those are the things that were kind of winning my week. But now we're going to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog's legs.
No!
What is happening?
I have to say that I'm going to sit out of this conversation because I have no idea what this is all about.
We're gonna fill up your phone with images. God.
So here, look, here's the gist is that they put out two different posters for the new Sonic the Hedgehog movie that's coming out next year. The first one is a Sonic in shadow. You can't really, you just kind of see a little glow coming off of him. He's not Shadow the Hedgehog. I said Shadow on Sonic. And I didn't want to, you know, that's a different character, just to be clear.
That's true, yeah.
And then they also had one of I think it's the Golden Gate Bridge and Sonic's legs that they just look weird. So to address, he's very furry and his legs are extremely muscular. And I don't know about all this realism, but people are mad. Here's the thing. I did not have a big position on this. I didn't come in big anything. But people are heated.
Karama just showed me the image.
The post. It's just.
And the fact. The fact that this is a thing.
I know.
The fact that people are panicked about it is weird, right?
Like, people have way too much time on their
it's
hands.
It's a shadow of a character that's in a video game.
I don't think. I was expecting, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger circa 1980 whatever legs.
Like,
they're just slightly toned.
That's what I'm saying. He doesn't have like Goku
and
legs.
Especially for a guy who runs as fast as he does, I would say those legs look pretty average.
I'm just saying, isn't his job to run? Yeah. Like, I think we should be more upset that Barry Allen doesn't have muscular legs.
Right, exactly. But the internet apparently is freaking out over this. Hold on, I'm seeing another
image. Yeah, there's another picture.
So these are the legs that I'm showing Adam now.
So still not that...
Here, wait, let me see.
The criticism was that that his legs don't make sense, that it doesn't seem like they'd be coming off the same body. Now, I don't...
Wow,
I'm not,
really?
I'm not,
a cartoon hedgehog doesn't look realistic?
That's what I'm saying. How about the part that he doesn't look like a hedgehog?
Yeah.
Can we do that?
Yeah. None of this is real.
How?
I'm not a legologist, however. It does look a little odd, I will say. The whole thing is kind of weird, but... who's surprised? Did y'all see what CGI Smurfs looked like?
Right.
This dude is also blue. Like, how did you think it was going to go?
Yeah.
I think most people are just having fun with it, but I had people say they threw up.
Listen, we had similar reactions for the same reasons, but there was a, an, a, not a reaction when we saw Detective Pikachu's trailer.
Oh, I saw people. Yeah, there was a whole article on our very site about how people didn't like it, and I'm astonished.
So anytime, you know, these characters that we've
people
only seen
like
in games and animation,
concluded.
Yeah, it seems to be like animals cannot have fur.
This is I feel this is an anti-furry sentiment, and this 2018, you need to get it together.
They really do.
Furries are out there. Furries got jobs.
One of them won at the Game Awards.
I was going to say, one of the Game Awards.
Yeah, is the best gamer out there in competitive games. So if that's what it is, if y'all are just really anti-furry,
yeah,
get over
this
it.
This is the next frontier.
That's
but
it.
But you know what? And I think you're right, because people had adverse reactions to Lion King, too.
Like, yeah, it's weird. People like, keep having this.
They're like, why are you ruining my childhood? I'm like, it's the same.
Well,
I
think the adverse reaction I saw to The Lion King was more or less just like, this is the exact same movie, just with CGI instead of hand-drawn animation. But I always take issue with that, when people get upset about something not being looking realistic. It's like, this is a hedgehog who runs at light speed. Nothing about this is realistic.
I wonder what you it know? Was so, that people, so that people wanted. Did they
that?
Want
yeah.
it to look like a cell shaded, just blue. No, why don't I'm a little. I don't know what it was that people
honestly
thought they would get.
Here's my thing.
What
and,
they wanted.
And this has nothing to do with his legs or his character thing. I did we ask for a Sonic the Hedgehog movie? Was there
yes,
like a fan?
I will say this.
Was there a fan?
There are yeah. fan movies
campaign yeah.
that lots of. I knew a guy who spent a ton of money. Spent so much money that in fact they got Jaleel White to come and provide the voice for their movie. That's how big
for
it
a
was.
Sonic movie.
Yeah,
for a fan made Sonic movie that he only did a
okay,
couple
so let
of
me
lines.
Get this straight. Let me get this straight. There is a fan made Sonic the Hedgehog movie with Urkel as the voice.
Yeah, because he was the voice of Sonic. He's not.
I'm going home.
He's not Urkel. He's Sonic.
Yeah.
When I think of Sonic the Hedgehog, Jaleel White is who I hear in my headspace.
So yeah.
That's
so, yes,
I'm
there is, there is
wow.
a burning demand for a Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, but it's out there.
And I don't know, you know.
I mean, I'm not surprised. This is the next wave of, quote unquote, like, remakes. Like, making them, put them in our world.
Yes.
And there's going to be virtual reality versions. There's already augmented. I mean, Pokemon is already an augmented reality game, so. But
I think
I'm sorry.
That'll freak people out. You have a Sonic the Hedgehog game in virtual reality yeah. where you play as Sonic the Hedgehog and the world is just flying by you at 10,000 miles yep. an hour.
Mm-hmm. And your legs are furry and muscular.
Yeah, that's going to be. You just look down in your VR headset.
So many reasons to throw up.
Yeah.
But I don't care what people say about Pikachu. Jigglypuff is a mood.
As an owner of furry, muscular legs myself, I have to say I'm okay with this.
See, and I know so much more about you, Adam.
Yeah,
than I ever
yeah.
wanted to.
Anyway, I guess some people's childhoods were ruined. And on the note of ruining childhoods, Doctor Who.
Hey.
So the season wrapped. Season 11?
Mm-hmm.
Is it wrapped too? Season 11.
Yeah, it was 11.
And
there's no Christmas special, which
no
is
Christmas
so
special,
confusing.
But there's a New Year special. And then
nothing.
The two big pieces of news were Jodie Whittaker and Chris Chibnall will be coming back for season 12, but it's not coming out until 2020.
Yeah, they're doing
which means it will probably be the last one that they do. This sort of fits with the rumors that we'd heard that the BBC was pissed off and Chris Chibnall was pissed off because he doesn't think that he can do 10 episodes a year every single year, and they're of the opinion that that has got to happen. So the last we had heard, the rumor was if they could not find somebody to take over both the Doctor's role and the showrunner role, that they would live with the fact that it was going to have a year off, but then after that, that would be the end.
I mean, that could change, though, if they have a really good next season. Did it feel like a season finale to you? Because it really felt like a regular episode to me.
Well, here's the thing about that. And then what's crazy to me is that I just did a Doctor Who search, and it led me to a Facebook post from a very well-known older Doctor Who fan named Ian Levine, and he said it was the worst season in the history of Doctor Who. He compared it with sexual assault, a thing that you should never ever do because that's
wow.
messed up. Not
See,
a cool.
This is why I don't go on Facebook.
Not a cool thing to do.
Nope.
But what surprised me about that, other than I think that's a despicable thing to say, but what actually surprised me was, this feels to me like the classic series. Because the classic series didn't do this stuff where there was a big season wrap up of a long arc. Yeah. They almost never did that, with the exception of...
And that's why I was asking, because it feels like classic Who. And I also feel like Eccleston's run, they were slammed for some of the same stuff. Like, it's not big enough.
Oh, I mean, they had the whole Bad Wolf thing pay off.
They did,
by the end of the season.
That there was that, and that's the thing about the classic series, is that with the exception of Trial of a Time Lord, that had a season arc. And again, I mean, I've talked about this in the past. They would have sort of loose things when John Pertwee started. His first year was sort of this, he had lost the knowledge of how to use the TARDIS because the Time Lords took it away from him. And he kind of spent the first year trying to try to trigger that thing in his brain. But it wasn't a thing that they were constantly dealing with. It wasn't this big complex arc. And there were seasons where there would be these little things. Key to Time was kind of a season arc. But for the most part, the classic series was just a bunch of individual stories. And then they got to the end because that was just the number of episodes they were doing. And this...
But what did you feel about, like, this particular episode?
I thought it was okay. Hmm. You know, but again, this is what I find myself
I was happy
thinking.
That Gracie got avenged, but I was like, when I knew Tim Shaw was going to be in it. Like,
yeah, I mean,
when I heard
assumed.
His voice, I'm like, oh, look, it's the scary tooth fairy that's back again. All right.
I mean, he was just okay, but I don't know.
His cape was massive this time.
Yeah, wow.
I was wow, you look like Dr. Doom on, like, who had a bad dental appointment. It was bad.
Yeah.
That outfit was bad.
Yeah.
But that's also classic Who, though.
I think that people evaluating this season based on the show 2005 to 2017 are making a lot of assumptions. And I've seen people say Chris Chibnall and Jodie Whittaker don't know anything about Doctor Who, don't care about Doctor Who. And what they did is just something very different. And it is. My expectations, I was used to the Murray Gold bombastic soundtrack that makes you feel excited or makes you feel like you're going to cry.
Yeah,
and
the soundtrack was very different.
And that is the thing. I actually find myself coming back to the score more than anything else as the thing that shows me the way in which the show is so different is that, it's a lot more sedate. It's a lot more about very specific, smaller moments. Because if you look at the season as a whole, it's just about Ryan and Graham finding family within each other. And I think Yaz sort of also kind of finding a connection to those people. And it's just that. It's just, you know, they kept making the joke where the doctor would call them fam and they'd go, no. And then at the end of the season, she said, no, I like it. I think it works. And I think that's what the whole season is about, found family.
And I also think that there were moments. I hope that, I know they said they didn't want to bring back any baddies, but I hope we see, or bring back any old characters. But I hope in the next season we see, like, the Ucks that were in this episode. I like them, and I hope they're powerful. I hope we do see them again. I hope there's something in the next season where they come back and they, you know, save the day or something like that.
I mean, I think we're going to probably that. I mean, I think the one weakness, so to speak, of the show is that there weren't any worthwhile villains because the characters.
Tim Shaw wasn't enough for me.
He wasn't that great, and I didn't. You know,
he was no weeping angel.
I like Demons of the Punjab, but what was sort of interesting about that is that those characters weren't villains.
No, you know? We thought they were, but they were actually...
And they had a lot of... That was a thing. It just felt like an experiment, which I'm not mad at. I just think that it, you know, as people have sort of pointed out, the stakes never felt really, really high.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of people felt frustrated, or some people anyway. But it was what's always weird to me is that people will say stuff like, the Whovians have spoken. You spoke. You didn't like it. That's okay. Stop acting as though your opinion somehow represents the entirety of fandom.
Well, that's just, I mean, we just finished talking about people who don't like in animated characters' fuzzy legs. Yeah. Like, everybody feels ownership of the thing that they're fans of. So
but I think, I mean, if you're talking about high stakes, I got to say, man, the idea that they're taking the entire next year off, I think that's
a mistake.
You know, there's so much content out there and no franchise is invincible at this point, and I think that you're really running a risk. I mean, Game of Thrones did it this year, but they're leading into their final season, and then there's no more, you know, so there's not banking on we have to retain an audience over the long term.
Yeah, they had They'd already banked, like you said, they had a lot of cachet with
I mean, gosh, especially given that we had a year before this season as well. So it's just not a lot of Doctor Who over the course of a lot of time. And I think that that is going to, I think that's going to hurt. And it's going to be sad because then it's going to hurt. And then people are going to say, oh, it's because of Jodie Whittaker or something. And it's not. It's just the logistics of how this is working out are not conducive to a show building momentum and an audience, it doesn't seem like to me.
I got a solution. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we do. We're going to have to live with the situation as it is. No new episodes in 2019. 2020, obviously, Chris Chibnall should do whatever he wants to do. But whoever takes over the show after that, assuming that this is what's going to happen, I think that the next time we see a doctor, there'll be a regeneration. You see the regeneration start to happen, and then you do a time jump. And you see the next doctor quotes in action for one episode. But what you find out is that doctor is not the 14th doctor. That's like the 15th or the 16th doctor.
So you're sort of
and
doing
so we've lost a whole bunch of regeneration. So we don't know why this doctor has lost all of this time. And then what you can do is you can have different teams have different stories. So here for like for these five episodes, we're going to get this doctor, and they're all legitimately the doctor. And then you, because I this what would happen?
But you'll erase this doctor ostensibly.
No, I'm not erasing this doctor. I'm talking about. I'm saying no. The 13th doctor will have existed.
I mean, that really blows up the structure of Doctor Who as we know it.
But it would be fun to sort of have different teams taking on different doctors all at the same time. It's almost as though they would be sort of taking the Big Finish format, the Big Finish audios, because the Big Finish audios will put out all different doctors at the same time. You know, this quarter we're going to put out this sixth doctor story, the seventh doctor story, this fifth doctor story, whatever. And I would think it would be really interesting if you had different creators, different writers, different teams having different Doctor Who stories and had it be more of an anthology type of show where, and at that point, what would be nice about it is also you could have every type of person playing the doctor and they all would still officially be the doctor. They would just be different incarnations over different time periods. And then all you need to do is find little connective tissue. And then you have almost like a continuity of, you know, like an expanded universe of Doctor Who in a way.
Well, BBC, if you're listening, Danny,
there you go.
I've solved
your problem. Yeah, yeah. Put me in charge of one of those. I'd be great at it. I've been watching the show since I was four. And that's all you need to be good at running a show is watching a lot of TV.
That's right.
That's how it works. Anyway, I understand why people are frustrated about that. I just when people get quite as extra as they do, I just wish they would take a breath and think, why am I this upset? That's all. Because it is, at the end of the day, a TV show.
Yeah.
I've been watching the show again.
It's not like we're talking about a cartoon character's legs.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Yeah, guys.
So that's when the stakes are really high.
Priorities. So that is going on. And then there was another big TV thing that happened this week, which is
Elseworlds.
Mm-hmm. The CW aired its three night event. It was The Flash and Arrow and Supergirl. No Legends of Tomorrow. By the way, the Legends of Tomorrow episode, they drop a hint. They're like, oh, we got all these messages from Supergirl. And they said, sounds like the annual crossover event, hard pass. And that's why I like Legends. But the big thing that came out of that, or the two big things that came out of that were, A, we were introduced to Batwoman. And they straight up said, hey, look forward to that next year. As if to say, at this point, it's a lock. There's going to be a Batwoman show. And they also introduced what the next event is going to be, which will be Crisis on Infinite Earths. A.K.A. that time they killed Supergirl. So that's a pretty big deal. Did y'all watch Elseworlds?
I didn't. I'm a bad seed.
Cameron, did you watch it?
Yeah. I mean, I thought some of the Easter eggs were interesting. Like Barry, there's really funny things that would happen. I think I felt that there's supposed going to be more Supergirl than there was. One of the things that's nice about this is that it also gives a chance for the writers of the CW shows to flex a little bit in their different incarnations. They get to play off each other. I think Jeremy Davies, who played John Deegan, was really funny. I thought it was interesting. I thought also because of an actor of that caliber, I thought he'd have a little bit more to do, but it wasn't bad. He was using the Book of Destiny to basically pull everything off and swap people around and you know, Flash was Arrow, Arrow was Flash. For some reason, nobody noticed this.
And then Flash and Arrow were villains. And definitely boyfriends.
Yeah, they were like
they were two leather daddy. It was weird. Yeah, it was a weird situation.
Basically, every time this book has the power to control, obviously, apparently storylines, not just and lives. There were other things. There were little things that were funny, like a lot of Easter eggs to both the comics and other shows. Like Barry and Kara basically get this plan of rotating the Earth in the opposite direction which is basically something that happened in Superman, like Christopher Reeve
in the comics, old 70s.
But I mean, I always find that funny because, like, in real life, if you did this, like, gravitational pull would basically cease to exist, we'd probably all die.
We're gonna slow time down.
Exactly.
Said, okay. Science.
There's another nod with to Lois Lane, where Elizabeth Tulloch, if it's Tulloch or Tulloch, who was playing Lois, she looked exactly like Margot Kidder did.
Oh yeah, they had the costumes and everything.
Yeah, and so all of these little Easter eggs. I think one of the funniest things to me, and that was just because it's a joke that I've heard for a while, when Earth 90, Barry Allen, which is John Wesley's ship, finally makes it to Earth 1, he spots Diggle and asks him why he's not wearing his ring. And that's a regular joke that happens in comics, that, like, there's sort of can only be one black character, so that Diggle is undercover. He's actually John Stewart. And the ring that he's referring to is
the
Green Lantern ring. It's a regular joke that's gone on in comics and in the show. And I just had to chuckle I think that's what the writers did. They had fun with all this stuff. I think the only thing, I mean, I thought Batwoman was fantastic. I want to see her in her own show. I am curious. The only other thing that was hilarious to me was that hammer that you saw Lois holding in the picture. I was like, why is Mjolnir in a DC
show? A different thing. That's a different thing.
It was like the solar hammer, which is part of the cosmic anvil, which is a storyline that I actually did not follow with Superman. I had to look it up. But yeah, I mean, it was fun, but it was weird because I felt like the whole Elseworlds crossover was a big 3-night trailer for Crisis on Infinite Earths. And it was like, okay, so you're advertising for next year's crossover? Is that what I just saw?
I don't want to say thing bad. I did not care for Elseworlds. I have to be honest.
Yeah, I just didn't. I think they made it out to be a really, really big thing. And then at the end of it, it was like, guess what? We're setting up another really big thing. And it was like.
But so then let's hone in on the Batwoman side. Like, there was some little bit of drama, Dragonsturm, when Ruby Rose was announced. Some people had some questions about her acting chops and stuff. How did she do?
I think she did fine, but it's also a CW show. It's not Shakespeare.
My take on it was still needs work, but there's a foundation. And I think, and perhaps this is the salty Gotham fan in me.
They nailed the costume, though.
But the costume is great, but I watched the Arrow episode, which was the one where they really introduced Batwoman, with my wife, and she said, this is supposed to be Gotham City, a rooftop with a bunch of up-facing lights and styrofoam gargoyles.
Yeah, yeah.
Try again. And I understand that obviously they were going to go pretty tight on the budget because they didn't need to do more than that. But yeah, I'll tell you, when you've had coming up on 5 seasons of a television show based on Gotham City that's set in New York City, the difference is pretty stark. If they're going to do...
But I also think this version, like this crossover, even all 3 of these shows are more popcorn than Gotham. Gotham is very dark.
It can be, but Gotham is also very... I don't know. I think that show is very fun and light. I mean, again, I've seen the first 3 episodes of this supposedly the darkest season, and it still has got a really great sense of humor to it. So yeah, I mean, I think for me, I came at this a little biased because I'm sour as hell that the one show is ending and all of a sudden now we're going to have a completely different Gotham City on a different network.
Yeah.
And it's hard to compare the two where, you know, I think they shot some stuff in Chicago and it gave me thoughts of Chris Nolan all over again.
Well, let's just hope that they take some of the fan stuff, because honestly, a lot of the Easter eggs and things that happened in the show were directly from the fans. Like, that was like, oh, wow, the writers are watching
they
Twitter.
They did one thing that was pretty cool, which is when they sort of wrapped the Gotham storyline, Ruby Rose and Melissa Benoist are like, oh, this was fun. I wish we could hang out more.
Yeah.
And Supergirl says, I think we would make a really good team. And then Batwoman says, world's finest.
Which is the comic.
And that was dope. That was cool. I would watch, if they did a world's finest crossover just between those two shows,
yeah,
I would be all over that. That sounds good to me. And I actually think that that moment, that little piece and the stuff between Kara and Kate Kane, I thought those were the best scenes.
Yeah, a lot
anything
of those
involving
really good.
Those two really suggested. I think that was the best that we got out of that. There was
it seems very
at some point they need
other.
To acknowledge that Kara Zor-El has just a lot more heat with other women than she does with men. I'm sorry that that's just how the show seems to be played. But she had more heat with Kate Kane than she ever had with any of the dudes.
I totally felt that she had. I felt like the actresses knew each other. Like they seemed very natural around each other. The only other thing I'm going to say about Batwoman is her costume is fantastic, and Marvel, y'all need to get with DC's hair and makeup department because her wig was tight. Somebody could have used some lessons in humans about her wig because it looked great.
Yeah, it was a good wig. Before we talk about movies, here, have a delightful word from our sponsor.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
That was delightful.
I changed my life. Yeah. Hey!
Let's talk about movies.
All right, Adam, do you want to talk about Mortal Engines?
Let's talk about Mortal Engines.
Mortal Engines, here's the reason why I'm starting with it. It's because it got a lot of really middle-of-the-road reviews, a lot of people saying, it got delayed and delayed and delayed, and it just isn't what we wanted, not good enough. And then I got a text.
Do you know who has two thumbs and dug Mortal Engines? This guy.
All right.
Okay, you guys heard it here first. Look at the time of the day right now, because Negative Man
likes something.
I believe
likes
that
something.
Unfairly, I am characterized as being too hard on things, which I think is not true, but whatever. I enjoyed Mortal Engines. I acknowledge that it is a flawed movie, but
what would you like?
Here's the thing, is there's so many of these post-apocalyptic kind of YA sci-fi based movies out there. I just think on the design front, this one was head and shoulders above a lot of that other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it over a Maze Runner any day, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and just, I thought the story was good. It was simple. It riffs on a lot of it is kind of Star Wars, you know, and that's fine, but it does it really well. And I found the cast engaging, even though it's mostly unknowns. I thought they were fun. It's funny because I was not looking forward to this movie at all. I was talking to you guys before. I was like, oh, God, I got to go see Mortal Engines
tonight.
I remember
you asking, like, is there an after credit scene? I'm like, oh, just
and
sit
just
there.
The idea of like, oh, sure, city. What if cities but wheels, you know? And that to me just seems so absurd. But the thing I love the most about this movie is that it really trusts its audience a lot, I felt like. It throws a lot of wild concepts out there and it doesn't over-explain them. It doesn't over-explain its world. It's just kind of, here is this world. Here are these things. They talk about the Lazarus Brigade, and they never say, well, the Lazarus Brigade was a brigade that did this, blah, 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 blah. It was like, no, they just throw it out there, and given the context, you're meant to understand what that means. And so few movies in the sci-fi space these days do that.
Yeah.
Trust
even when
you
they,
to,
even when
to
they
figure
talked
things
about,
out.
When Hugo Weaving talked about municipal Darwinism, I was like, I thought about it. I was like, they don't. No, actually, you don't need to explain that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Cities
given
that
what
eat
we've seen
other cities.
It does a lot of showing and not telling, which is what you're supposed to do when it comes to world building and exposition. You know, it was the same thing. Lord of the Rings, they had that's the obvious connection because this is produced by the same team. They had the big preamble where they explained the origin of the ring, but they never were like, you know, and here's how the hobbits came to the Shire and here's why a hobbit. It was just, they were just there. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a world that it felt like it existed and people just lived in it. And I got some of that same feeling from this film.
Yes, I'm always glad that they trusted me to know why hobbits had hairy feet.
Yeah.
I'm from Hungarian descent. Yeah. I know.
There you go.
Some of that stuff's just natural.
And some things just don't need to be explained.
Ladies and gentlemen, this episode's been sponsored by fur.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow, who knew? Who knew it was going to be that kind of episode?
Anyway. Yeah, so anyway, like, listen, my expectations were not through the roof, and I will acknowledge, like, I think that the movie has flaws. I think that there are some characters that you're just kind of like, what happened to that person? They disappeared for 2/3 of the movie, and now we're supposed to care about them again. On the whole, I had a good time. I thought it was really paced well. I thought the action was fun and coherent, and some of the characters were really cool.
Yeah, my beef with the movie was it has a wild case of YA protagonist syndrome, where they're a little too self-insert for me. And to have a character who is supposed to be, in the book, is pretty horrifically disfigured and still has, you know, some kind of scarring in this movie, I don't know. I didn't have a real vibe off of our two leads.
No, I actually...
That was sort of my biggest beef, is that the side characters were more interesting to me.
Yes, and you and I agreed about this immensely. Like, Hera Helmar, who played Hester Shaw, that's the girl with the red scarf, and Robert Sheehan, if you guys remember, he was the immortal from Misfits.
I'm not trying to come for them as actors.
No, they were fine. I just felt like I wish they had more to do than just staring at it. She just stared at him angrily a lot. And I just wanted, like...
And then they were in love, I guess?
Maybe.
Yeah, it really...
That was kind of thrown at us. It was but honestly, singer and actress Jihei, who played Resistance leader Anna Fang, and we're going to ignore for a second that they gave her a Chinese surname and she's Korean. We'll leave that alone. In a fantastic red suit with a lovely chainmail blouse number, none of which ever got a speck of dirt or blood on them until they did. She was my favorite. She stole every single scene.
Han Solo. I mean, yes. She's basically...
And her crew was just as gorgeous. And the crew looked like they were styled by Production IG. My manga and anime fans will know what I mean by that. Which is why I think Anna should have her own origin story anime based on that one line that she gave.
She said, I was a slave, blah, blah, blah.
Freeing herself.
I was like, what's the story? I want to know that. I was like, where's that movie? Yeah.
That's the Netflix anime 12 episode. And I want to see.
And I think that, like, I honestly would not be surprised if this movie got a costume.
Yes, yes.
Or some sort of production design nomination.
It should totally get production design.
The design in this film is outstanding.
And the sound
soup
design.
Soup to nuts. Everything.
And the sound design.
The effects, the, you know, the way they blend obvious, the times when they're shooting obvious green screen, you know, when there's the two characters at one point fall off of London, which is this giant city that goes, and they're walking through the treads, and just the way that the tread marks, I should say, and the way that is rendered is really cool. It just looks great.
Scale was incredible.
Yeah,
I think the thing that,
and especially in this day and age, it's hard to get that across because everything is CGI. All these effects are the same. You know, everything feels rubbery. Everything kind of feels like a painting a lot of times. And just for whatever reason, I don't know what the magic is that, I guess it was Weta that worked on this film.
Yes,
like,
I was about to say it's all Weta.
They can do that in a way that sells it as a real world with dirt and grime that people live in.
Yeah. And you can totally tell the haves and the have nots. Although it was really funny, kind of like the rich Londoners.
Oh, yeah. I really struggled with this.
I was like, okay, why are you guys standing here thinking that you're not going to get shot at? Like,
really?
Why?
You don't. That actually rang really true to me.
Really?
You don't think that people would do that? How many people tune into like footage of the wars that we have and are like, ooh, look at those things blowing up?
I thought that was actually
a really good point of the film was making.
As an
was
analogy?
These are normal people. These are normal day-to-day citizens of London getting so caught up in this thing that they're treating it like a sporting event.
It was like the capital city in Hunger Games.
I agree with that people would do that. There is an element to this film in which I am meant to believe that we should all come together and say, they refer to those people in London that are cheering as innocents.
Yeah.
And that pissed me off because that is not how I see them.
But that was on purpose, though.
But no, I think that's very true. I think it's...
I think
that actually... I think that says something, though, about the way people are. It's very easy to get caught up in that kind of thing and to you know, root for your side. And, you know, we all... Not to get, you know, super political, but, you know, throughout history, it's like every nation that has gone to war has committed atrocities. I don't think that it's unfair to say that. And in World War II, I don't think the people in America were like, well, we really need to think about what we're doing and whether we're doing the right thing and how we're, you know, it was very much you're living your day-to-day life and you want your side to win. And I think that that I was actually affected by seeing that in this movie. And I was thinking about that and thinking about, wow, like, look at these are normal day-to-day, everyday people who just live their lives usually. And now they're this cheering mob for this death and destruction and how easy that slope is to go down. And I thought, I don't know if that's something they were really trying to evoke, but that really was something that resonated.
I think they were trying to evoke that with Hugo Weaving's character, how he seemed to have good intentions at first, and then it turned into, but the power he could have.
Hugo Weaving has got the man is a scenery chewer, and I would like for him to play a nice, good guy with nuance and sedateness literally ever in his life.
Was
just
he
give it a
evil
shot.
When he was an elf? I just felt like he was trying to protect his daughter.
Oh, I don't know. I just find that...
No, but it was bombastic.
That is
but
true.
He
must
he,
be cast into the fiery chasm yes, from whence true. It came. You know, like that type of thing.
I was not prepared for Adam to quote that.
I guess I'm just so used to Hugo... I don't know, man. Just whenever he shows up now... And I have loved Hugo Weaving in the past, but now I'm just... I'm a little weary of this character that he just keeps playing. It's like the same shtick every time.
I was excited to see Frankie Adams. That made me happy.
Yeah, that was fun. I mean, fans.
Yes.
Let's talk about Shrike, because this is honestly...
This is one of the shocking moments.
Shrike was the creepiest thing I'd ever seen, and I had no idea that it was mocap by Stephen Lang.
It is one of my favorite parts of the film, and also a part that I see as really problematic, because... It is like basically this Frankenstein horror monster thing stuck into the middle of this movie. It feels very out of place, but it's great. Like it's one of the most compelling parts of the film. But
I don't think it was edited in properly. It felt very like
you could take it. I mean, and it's in the book, so this is adapted from. So it's a very important part of the book, but it's so weird and different from everything else that's going on. But that's why I loved it almost. It's so creepy and grotesque and Peter Jackson-esque, you know, horror movie Peter Jackson-esque, that I got such a great kick out of it.
I liked it, but it also felt like it had no place in this movie to me. I wish, in a weird way, that it was a separate movie. I love the story of it is really great, but it actually stands on its own. Just that story of here's a creature that's following a person and... The story is why, you know, it's not because it's not it follows is sort of this existential thing, whereas this has it's not a gothic romance, but there is a real heart to it.
Yeah.
And I love the design. I really enjoyed that. It just didn't feel like it had any place in this film.
I'm right down the middle. I felt like he should have been in the movie, but they didn't execute. They just didn't stick the landing. Like, I felt like Jin and Saw Gerrera in Rogue One, I felt like, okay, wait, we didn't see enough. Why did you raised her and then we bye and now you're crazy and now you're dead. I'm confused.
Well, this one
I felt we did see him, but I felt like we saw enough scenes, but we saw the wrong scenes. Right. Like, I wish we had seen like some of that flashback stuff when he was dying. I'm like, yeah, see, I wish I'd seen that towards the beginning and we didn't know what it was.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, to me, that was one of the most emotionally affecting moments in the film.
Yeah.
And again, it's not the main plot. It doesn't, you know, it was kind of a side quest almost. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely
a side mission.
Yeah, but it was really, really good for what it was executed. It felt really out of place. I don't know. It's interesting with this film. I think that
But that's another story. Would you see that? Yeah. Would you want to see that as in like a side
this
short?
This movie is stuffed. And I haven't read the original book, but I went and did some research and read up on the plot. And they cut a lot out of the book already. It's one of those things where you wish the book, you know, with Lord of the Rings, they had the luxury of this is the most popular fantasy series of all time. So we have to cut some stuff, but we can get most of it in there and treat it as a trilogy. Like, this book could have been more than one movie.
Give it a trilogy and then make it one of those trilogies, a prequel, where we see where some of these people come from.
But you got to think about the production side of it, and they're not going to bank that like
a preset trilogy on a book franchise that
doesn't have that level of clout that Lord of the Rings had.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a shame of it because I agree. Like, we could have gotten Anna Fang was great, and she, you know, I like the fact that we don't have like her whole origin. It's the Han Solo thing. We get a little bit of who she is. She's got great character, and she comes in and affects the story.
Jihei needs her own movie anyway. Just by herself.
There are things that we could have spent more time in, and I think that there was a lot of rush to get a lot of stuff in from the books, but also get through the plot that does hurt the movie a little bit.
All the stuff that was going back on in Rolling London.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Hugo Weaving's daughter and this dude that she's with, and there's a whole plot there that, again, it's just there's
and
not
the blonde
a-
woman that all of a sudden it's like the same character over and over again. The blonde woman who's part of the capital that I not my father, not my family,
yeah,
not my people. And then it's like,
oh,
he is terrible. Like, wow.
But that's not a bad story to tell.
But
I mean, everything in this movie is a trope. You know, it's
yeah.
Like I said, it takes a lot from Star Wars, and that's fine. Like a lot of science fiction and fantasy
does that. But
that's
the thing about.
But you have to spend a little time with that character to give a damn about
but
her.
But wouldn't
in
it be weird if in Star Wars, the first Star Wars movie, if in addition to the stuff that was going on, also Luke Skywalker had a weird zombie following him? It's just, do you know what I mean? It's
he did
just,
Yoda. I'm just kidding.
Whoa, Yoda doesn't come until Empire, so you need to watch yourself. Come on now.
No,
come
I know.
I'm just kidding.
Like, listen, I will freely admit that the Shrike stuff, which is.
The Star Wars fans are going to tear me up in the comments.
It feels weird. It feels like it's from a different film, but it's really good.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It was executed so well.
That's what makes it hard. It was like when they showed him for the first time and it was this grotesque character and the way it was handled, I was on board for that because a lot of these movies don't go there.
Steppenwolf, it was like, it was just full caricature.
Yeah, they don't go to
I'll
that place.
I'll take him over Steppenwolf, that's for sure. Yeah. But anyway, look, here's what I want to say. I'm glad that we took the time to talk about Mortal Engines.
Yeah.
I think we probably talked about it more than most people did.
Sure.
But we've got to talk about Into the Spider-Verse.
Absolutely.
We have got to talk about this is, you know, potentially movie of the year. This, you know, talking about how it's probably going to win best animated. People love this movie. It had 100% on Rotten Tomatoes until three Grinches decided to ruin it. So here we are. We have all seen Into the Spider-Verse. I saw Into the Spider-Verse, I think, maybe a week and a half ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
When did y'all see it?
Last week.
I also saw it last week.
Okay. What did you think?
Loved it.
Yeah. It was amazing. It was stunning. It was a fun, really colorful ride. I have mentioned this many times that Miles is the little black Boricua boy that I needed to see from Brooklyn. I also love that they did not subtitle the Spanish.
Oh, yeah.
Because that
very
is,
smart.
And writer Phil Lord actually told IO9 that his mother is Cuban and it was deliberate. He's like, this was growing up. Just
right.
Switch back and forth.
Of course.
And you're walking down the street and you switch back and forth. And he said, I made this for all those mixed kids out there, those little geeks that like don't think there's anybody out there for them. He's like, that was my little thing for them. And I thought that was really, really smart. And, Liev Schreiber is the kingpin. I'm not going to give away the Doc Ock surprise, but I loved Doc Ock. I love a lot of just the different blending of the different anime and animation styles. And when I thought what was so funny to me was how they revealed Miles getting bitten. Like it's this big, huge thing. And his reaction to the bite, I thought was absolutely hilarious. And they got kind of played with some of those tropes, but even, and I know you were here for Peter Porker, but
obviously,
but Nicolas Cage and all of the different voices and characterizations. It took me till almost to the end of the movie to realize where I heard Chris Pine's voice.
I didn't even realize it until I saw the trailer.
He's already talking about it. Yeah, that's already been just out. That's not a spoiler.
I knew it instantly.
Did you?
I
heard that voice and I said, I have the weirdest. Oh, that's why. Oh man, it's Chris Pine's voice.
I don't want to say where it is, but it just took me.
No,
a minute.
I picked up on that in a heartbeat. I heard it and I was like, thump thump. That's Chris Pine.
Yeah. So. I let's just to first harp on the animation. I think Karima hit on that. Like this movie looks amazing.
It does.
Yeah, this is sort of when you were talking about Mortal Engines. This is what I was thinking. Is that I feel 2018 was kind of a cool year in that films felt a little less like they were all copying each other because we were all kind of living in the standard Marvel Cinematic Universe where things were all starting to feel away. And I felt these two movies, and certainly Into the Spider-Verse, what's so important is that it's come out, it's a mainstream movie, and it's going to not raise the bar, but move the bar so that people go, maybe we don't have to make all the CGI stuff look the same.
Right. I mean, because animated movies now, the characters are different, the design is different on that level, but the I don't even want to say, I don't know how to describe it. Just the aesthetic is very similar.
And they seamlessly moved in between styles.
Yeah, this is completely different. And I mean, even down to the thing I loved the most on the visual side was the grain.
Yeah.
The paper grain that was in the backgrounds and stuff like that, that made it look like a comic book. I was like, those little touches just are so distinctive and unique to this film, and it really, it was just,
and even how the word bubbles
came, I would giggle at every little at every little like visual flair, and the blending of styles, I mean, that's, you know, I think people are harping on that a lot because of the, you know, that's one of the main themes, is that you have the different characters from different universes, but it's seamless and it's beautiful and it looks great.
But there was also, it's also a well-written story. Like,
yes, he didn't, smart.
He did not know how to use his powers at the beginning, and he's got to get taught, and then he might not. They got to make a decision about, like, okay, who's, in terms of the ranking of the different spider people from the different universes, who can do what? And, like, they were having, like, realistic conversations if you're going into something. I just thought it was executed brilliantly. I know there's people out there that there's like three people who don't like it, and they need to sit down.
it was a perfect score, and then one guy put out a review.
Here's what was funny about it. All he had to do was sit there and eat his food. He did not have to say anything.
But here's the thing. I mean, maybe this was his plan all along, but that review came out, and I did a quick Twitter search, and I found the delightful ratio of him listing his review and then just him getting dragged for days. And I thought, this is funny, but also, was this not the plan?
It had to have been, right?
I mean, why else would you give a bad review to a movie that's talking about how it has 100%? You want to be the person that gives it a bad review.
That's possible. But I mean, sometimes people don't like things, you know, and that's okay. If you don't like Into the Spider-Verse, I'm not judging you.
I am.
That's fine. Yeah, I just found it like real. And it's such a, you know, we've seen a couple of movies really tread this line this year of being goofy and funny and self-referential, but also good action adventure stories, and that's a tough line to tread, and this movie treads it expertly. It's hilarious. This movie is hilarious.
Oh, it is, and it doesn't take itself seriously, like you said. And I also think there's enough there for everybody. There's enough canon there for hardcore geeks and Spidey fans. There's something there for the casual reader, somebody who doesn't know anything about the mythos that wants to just take their kids to a movie. Like, I think there's something for everybody.
I love
everybody.
That you could take kids to this
movie. Oh, my
movie.
God. Yeah,
no
this is a great kids movie.
Isn't that weird how we have to, like, yeah, it's a superhero movie, but don't take your kids?
I know. I know.
But this one,
you can.
I mean,
take the whole family.
If you can take your kid to see Bambi, you can see Spider-Man
yes,
Into
you
the
can.
Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's one traumatic moment early in the film, but...
I trust kids.
Yeah.
I was surprised. That traumatic moment surprised me.
I'd read about it beforehand, so I kind of know.
I had not read about it, but I had a feeling.
Yeah.
It made sense to me. I mean, I was hoping, because the thing is, when you read reviews, because even though we had seen it before it came out, people had seen it way before.
Yeah.
And so the word on the street was that this is, you know, potentially the best Spider-Man movie ever made. And
I think that's true.
And I still haven't formulated a final decision on that, but I think potentially. I mean, for a long time, I considered Spider-Man 2 to be the blueprint of what a superhero movie ought to be. And so for me to say Into the Spider-Verse even could be better than that is huge. I just think it's so amazingly well done. We talked about the animation already. Miles Morales he's so good. We really needed somebody that wasn't Peter Parker, honestly. I like Peter Parker, but the thing is, and we've talked about this, you know, we've had three different versions of Peter Parker in live action movies. We needed a fresh story and a fresh point of view.
We did, but I also think the best Peter Parkers, the best Spider-Men we saw this year were in a game and an animated film. Because if you're looking at a singular story, the storyline in Spider-Man PS4, I literally have sat and watched cutscenes from the video game, and it's amazing. I'm like, this is the movie we've been waiting for. And then now that I've seen Into the Spider-Verse, this is the other movie we've been waiting for. Like, two really strong storylines, and they did not have
a live action person in them. I have a hard time believing anyone could watch this movie and not love Miles Morales. Like, the character is just handled so well.
And Shameik Moore did an amazing
job. Yeah, and he's so likable and so relatable for anybody. I didn't grow up in New York City. I've never tagged anything, but I can relate to a lot of where he was coming from, you know?
And his dad. And that was dealt with also very well. Like, I knew Prowler was going to be in this movie. Prowler's not his dad. Calm down. But I did. But Prowler is in the movie, and I was curious. I'm like, I know Mahershala's in this. I know he's Prowler. How are they going to handle it? They handled it very well.
Yeah.
Wow. I see. I like this movie so much, and then I'm embarrassed because like, who was it? Son of Baldwin on Twitter said, I don't want to go see this movie. I know that my nephews and nieces are going to want to go see it, but I don't like, I have problems with Miles Morales, not the character, but I don't like that, you know.
I know who you're talking about.
Wait,
he has
what's
a problem.
The problem?
So the beef is that,
the origin story.
Is that the element of his uncle being a criminal, that there's no representation of black women really in that story. And there's just things about, and just in general, that Brian Michael Bendis is a white guy with a mixed family who, as a result, thinks that he has the authority to speak about black lives.
And the person who you're speaking of, I know what he's referring to, and everything that he's referring to, I have agreed with in terms of some of the development of his character in the comics, but I believe that the writers of this movie, because he is Afro-Latino, so I'm not mad that his mother is Puerto Rican. That's how he was created. I have always had an issue with that side not being represented. So the fact that it's represented in this movie, I don't have a problem with. I think the writers handled it very well. I understand what that person is talking about. But I would rather listen to what he had to say after he saw the movie. I would rather him give that critique after he sees it, I'll love to talk to him.
Here's the thing. I just don't, when we're saying the praises of the film, I don't want to ignore commentary that made me say, well, I need to watch it again. And as I read the comic, you know, sort of consider things from this point of view. That's all.
No, and I completely agree with you. But, and as someone who, trust me, I regularly yell about how there's not enough black women in anything.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, like, you could come for, you know, this Into the Spider-Verse, but then you're coming for every movie almost.
It's
another movie where there's no black women, which is kind of
in the pantheon. And I started this year with Black Panther, so but in the pantheon of all this, I think that this character, the people that took this from Bendis to write it and put it in this movie, I think they did a good job. This is my opinion. Could there have been black women in this? Yes, just the same way that I wish Mr. Freeze, what's his name in Incredibles?
Sam Jackson.
Yeah, I want to say, I have more problems with the fact that we've never seen Mrs. Frozone except we just hear her screaming in the background. Like, that bothers me more than this. I do understand what he's talking about. I do. But because the character, his mother's Puerto Rican and his father's black, and that is represented well, I am, as me, my personal opinion, putting my blessing on this film. And again, and I'm going to go back to the same thing I said before. We would not have to have or talk about the lack of so much if there were just more.
Right.
Period. So if there was there's more animated films and more things coming out with black women represented and people of color in general represented, even Mortal Engines, we wouldn't have to keep fighting and arguing over why wasn't this here? Because I could say, you know what? I'm ignoring this. I'm going to go over here and watch these three other things. So that's my take on it.
Yeah. Hey, how did y'all feel about the Stan Lee cameo?
Oh.
Yeah, it was. It made me tear up a little bit.
Yeah. That was, I mean, if that's the last time you ever hear Stan Lee's voice, it's perfect. I mean, it just, you couldn't. I mean, yeah. I think they still
and
had other
had
stuff banged,
say,
but it's so good.
What they had him say, too.
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah.
Wow.
That was sweet. I mean, I don't think it's the last time, because supposedly he banged
they banged
cameos,
other things.
Right?
But I mean, I don't know how anything could. It was so perfect.
Did that not hit you right in the chest?
It did. It did. I mean, first of all, just seeing him in the first place, I was just like, oh, and then what he ends up saying to Miles, it's just, as the creator, it's just like, oh, man, I love that message of this movie. You know, I think the message of this movie is actually another really great one for kids and ties into one of my favorite movies of the past couple of years, The Last Jedi. Yes, that's right. I said it. Well, just this idea of Miles is just a kid, and I don't want to give away the plot, but like one of the morals is kind of like anyone can be the hero that they need to be at the right moment, you know? And I think again, for our time, that is a really great message. And one that needs to be put out there. So I was really psyched that was kind of the thrust of the movie overall.
It's again got this sort of found family in addition to the family that you're born into. And it's, what's funny is that if we divorce ourselves at the moment, if we stop politicizing bodies, the fact is it's not a hyper political film.
No, not at all.
No.
But what's great is that if you wanted some more politics in your Miles Morales story, why, you could just go and read this new comic that just came out this week, because there is no shortage of politics in that. Did you read it?
I have not. I just picked it up because I had so much work to do this week. But I know Saladin Ahmed, so I'm looking forward to seeing what he has to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a story about, you know, what's happening down by the border wall and kids getting picked up and put in cages. It's ripped from the pages, but done in a Miles Morales story. So if you watch that and said, gosh, you know, I want more depressing news in my comic books, you'll definitely, I mean, it's there. I'm glad that it's
no,
not.
No, I like Saladin as a writer. I don't want to tell everybody it's depressing. I want to read it.
I don't know how the story is going to shake out, but I definitely read the first one and felt the weight of it. And I was glad that Into the Spider-Verse existed as a counterbalance. Yeah. You know, I think there's room in the world for both, and I'm glad that there's both, is all I'm saying.
And I think that the thing that Into the Spider-Verse does really well is it's such a fun, it's so much fun. But there are stakes, and it feels like there are stakes. And I feel like in our space, a lot of the times we equate darkness and grittiness with stakes and with tension. And you can't have something be bright and colorful and fun and zany. And also, I'm so glad I got to use the adjective zany, by the way. I haven't used that as an adjective in a long, long time.
Good old Billy Zany.
Yeah, exactly. But have those characteristics and also feel tense and thrilling and, you know, compelling on that front. And Into the Spider-Verse does that. And that's a lesson that I think a lot of movies in our genre world could learn, is that you don't have to be super grimdark to make a movie feel like it has impact and that the action has impact and that you feel invested in how things are going to go.
I agree.
Yep. I mean, we haven't even talked about the other characters.
Yeah.
Because Spider-Gwen is great. Spider-Man Noir is great.
Spider-Man Noir, actually,
that's what I
think,
said, no, in the beginning,
I think
said
you
Nick
told
Cage.
Me this beforehand, because I was so thrilled for Spider-Ham. You know,
but Nicolas Cage was hysterical.
Yeah,
he was great.
Spider-Man
really
Noir
great.
Was the funniest part of the film, I think.
Wow.
Next to maybe Jake Johnson as older, washed-up Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Who is great, yeah, throughout the movie.
No, there were a lot of really good cameos, and I am looking forward to this new, there's spinoffs coming. They've said we don't know what we're getting, but anybody could be picked out of this universe. The only one that I didn't think was developed well that I would like to see more of a backstory on would be Penny. And a lot of people were confused why she was upset that that certain things happened in the movie, and they were they're like, why is she upset? Why is she sad? And it's like, because everybody has a connection to their powers and how they're, you know, and her, and she was afraid that her connection was severed. So that's my personal, but I want to see more of Penny.
And I love the way they it's so funny. You know, it's just the acknowledgement of the fact that the origin story is like this boilerplate template, that they acknowledge that and they play with it. It's just, it's so much fun.
Ah, yeah. Don't you say,
I want to see it again.
Don't you dare say it.
There you go.
Okay. Oh, I'm going to own it. I'm buying it. Yeah. Totally.
Okay. So, of the stuff we talked about, Spider-Verse won the week.
I think absolutely.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse definitely.
Also, you guys didn't see the post-credits sting.
No, I did.
Oh, you did. Danny
did.
Missed it.
I walked out
Danny
like
did
a
not.
Fool.
It is.
No, the post-credit is everything. That's
amazing.
Everybody, you stay in your seats and you wait for it because
first
it is
of all,
so good.
It has a huge, huge geek Easter egg for Spider-Man fans, which is awesome. But then it is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Like in a superhero movie, I laughed for legitimately 5 minutes.
Say no more. I'll see it again. Anyway, all right. So that is what won our week.
Yeah.
Please let us know what won your week. And hey, check out all the other podcasts. We already mentioned Battlestar Galacticast, but there's Strong Female Characters, and I talked to Jordan Zacharin, who does the Phantom Files, and this last week they did a Garbage Pail Kids episode that was really fun, and next week they're doing an episode about Teddy Ruxpin.
Ruxpin.
Yeah. There you go. I've been saying it wrong since I was in the first grade. Did y'all have one?
No.
Oh,
no,
I did. I was spoiled rotten.
That was a creepy ass toy.
It was. And the thing is, it would break instantaneously.
Nope,
and then there was a special hospital to send them to.
No,
anyway.
And the thing would talk by itself even when you didn't press the button.
If you want to know about creepy teddy bears.
And you could put your Metallica tape in there. That was always fun.
No, everything about it was wrong. No.
Anyway.
It's like ghosts and things like it being possessed or whatever was just going through my head. No, it couldn't stay in the house.
Anyway, if you want to check out that episode next week for the Fandom Files, for those that aren't creeped out, or maybe if you want a horror podcast that you didn't know about, check those out. And before we wrap up, where can folks find y'all on the internet?
You can find me, Karima, the Blurred Girl, T-H-E-B-L-E-R-D-G-U-R-L, all over the interwebs, but you guys know I get mail on Twitter.
And you can find me at RockTheFaces on Instagram.
And my name is Danny Roth, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary, also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week, and we'll see you again next week.